Welcome to the Push Pull Sales and Marketing Podcast. I'm Marcello.
And I'm Sherry. And each episode will provide you with sales and marketing strategies that you can implement immediately into your own business. In this episode, Marcello talks with Kurt Mortensen. He is a podcaster himself. He's a best-selling author. He has Influence University. And he talks a lot about persuasion and how that relates to sales. He helps companies. He's a consultant. There's not much he doesn't do in that realm, I think. He has a lot of years of experience under his belt, and it was really interesting to hear them talk about some things, and especially Marcello as a sales guy, being able to approach things from that perspective, questions that I wouldn't necessarily have thought to ask. So listen on, and as usual, we'll link you to all of Kurt's links in the show notes at pushpullsales.com. Enjoy.
Okay, everybody, I have Kurt Mortensen, and his podcast is, I believe, Kurt, is it Maximize Your Influence?
It is.
Awesome. His website is maximizeyourinfluence.com. We have another special guest interview today. So first off, Kurt, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself?
You bet. Grew up in California. You know, love life. My big thing is family. We love to wakeboard, go to the mountains, but my main focus in life has been teaching people how to persuade and influence because I was mad I didn't learn it in school.
Cool. And so in California, you grew up over there. When did you decide, hey, I want to jump in, I want to do influence, I want to do sales and persuasion, and when did you have that moment where you said, this is what I want to do?
Well, it was after you spent all this money for a college degree, and I actually worked on a graduate degree in business, and you get thrust in the workforce. And I realized I didn't learn some of the basic skills about human nature, about influence, about persuasion. And then I heard that most CEOs have a sales and a marketing background. I'm like, wait a minute. And it was just an eye-opener to me that it's all about influence and persuasion, that that's a key success skill. And it was mostly because I needed it for me personally. And then I was also a little mad that, wow, all this education and I had next to nothing in understanding people and influence and some of the key factors that you need for success.
Very good, very good. And we are gonna go into it a little bit later in terms of getting some sort of, every time we have an interview like this, we definitely would like to get a nugget of information and something valuable for our listeners here. So you not only have a podcast, so for what you're doing right now, this is pretty much your full-time business, correct?
It is. I do podcasting. I'm an author. I'm a trainer. I'm a consultant, and just passionate about teaching people the skills to be more influential and to basically get others to want to do what you want them to do and like doing it.
Gotcha. Now, is that more so from a face-to-face interaction, what you're actually doing, or you're doing it from a marketing standpoint and how to influence people in terms of the language, in terms of the product positioning, or is it a little bit of both? How exactly is that structured?
Yeah, I would say yes, all the above. I mean, there's a lot of different factors, right? With influence, you just can't focus on one. Too many people focus on the logic or the data dumper, which I call the vomit, right? Here are the 42 reasons, and that's not persuasive. And so it's a balance of logic and motion, understanding human nature, and bringing all those things together. That's where you really become very successful in sales and marketing.
Gotcha. Now, I like to make this joke all the time. So you said you're married and you have kids. How many kids do you have?
Four kids.
I like to think I'm very, very persuasive, except in terms of where we live and except when it comes to the missus. So Sherry, she is my other half, and she is the one who normally – the only person who I can't influence. In your life, are you in a similar situation or
– As far as a spouse?
Yeah. In all your studies and all that, does it work on the spouse?
Well, there are certain things that work, but then my spouse is pretty savvy on persuasion and influence. She's like, wait a minute, that's not going to work on me. And they know you so well, too. They can kind of see through some of the techniques and how that works out. So, yeah, I guess there's some challenges there when you live with a person and they know you so well.
Gotcha. Now, is your wife, is she in the business as well?
She is. She's helped me with a lot of the books and the research that I've done. And And it's interesting, when, in fact, for those in sales can appreciate this, she knows so many of the sales techniques that when someone tries to persuade her or sell her, she'll actually say, you know, I'm not going to buy for you, and let me tell you why. And you might smile about that, but that's actually pretty refreshing for a lot of people, for someone to sit down with them and say, you know what, let me tell you why you weren't persuasive, why I didn't like you, why I didn't trust you. And people actually appreciate it when she does it.
So flat out she tells them?
Yeah, she does. And again, it's shocking to people because everyone else lies. Oh, I'll think about it. I'll come back later, right?
Too expensive. No. Those are all. Everyone calls back. Come on now.
67% of the time, that's a lie. And she's like, no, let me tell you why I'm not going to buy. You did this wrong and this wrong. You should trust this. You tried this. You vomited on me. You didn't give any benefits. You did this. And again, it takes people back at first because they're not used to it. But then actually, that's going to save them a lot of money in the future because it's very rare for someone to really tell you the truth, especially at the end of a sales presentation.
I do that, and Sherry says I'm mean. It's kind of funny because for most people, and we talked about this in other podcasts, I love to have a sales interaction, to have a salesperson, something like that. Like if there's, you know, one of those like, oh, you can have a free sample, but we're going to send a sales rep over, something like that. Or I think it was for like a food delivery thing or something along those lines. Yeah, it was for food delivery. And I'm like, you're going to send a sales rep? I was so excited. I get to like evaluate and I have that whole, and Sherry's like, oh, and I was very honest with her too. Like, she's like, you don't like it. You don't like it. I'm like, no. It's not the idea I don't like. It's your actual presentation. And again, I went through some of the things. I'm like, one, some of the assumptions that you were saying about cost and stuff like that, I don't necessarily agree with. Two, you just badmouth the rest of the industry and you didn't provide any sort of facts and data, so I don't necessarily believe you. I'm gonna have to believe you. You were late. You sent, and that it was a very awkward interaction.
Need to hear that. No one's telling them that. In fact, I have a sign in my office. Outside my office, please solicit. Come in. Try to sell me. I want to hear you, because one of the things I do is monitor sales presentation, but I want someone to come in and try to persuade me. And in fact, if they're coming to my office, going door to door, and they're good, I want to hire them, because that takes some guts, and they've got to be good to do what they do to survive in that business.
Oh, I did that. I did that. Someone called me from Rutgers trying to sell me. They were trying to get a donation from me. And I've gotten many calls from the university trying to get me to donate something, and I'll donate directly to the wrestling team. But she was really good, and I'm like, but what are you? I'm like, are you junior or senior? She's like, oh, I'm a junior. I was like, when you graduate, here's my email. I'm like, send me your resume, seriously.
Give me a call. And it's refreshing as salespeople to be sold in the right way. It's a great thing. That's why they say salespeople are the easiest to close, because, right, we appreciate good techniques.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how long have you been so the name of the business is actually it's also called Maximize Your Influence?
That's the podcast, yeah.
Okay, so that's the podcast. And what's the name of your actual business?
Advanced Influence.
Advanced Influence. Okay, so how long have you had Advanced Influence?
Oh, 20 years.
20 years, okay.
20 years going deep into the world of the art and science of persuasion, influence, and sales. It's just so fascinating to me to understand why people do what they do.
Okay. And we were talking about this a little bit before. So you've had the podcast now. You're almost going on finishing up 3 years. You're going to be on 4 years now, correct?
Yeah, we're getting there.
Awesome. Awesome. So when you run into someone and you say, hey, okay, this is what I do. I do advanced influence. I have a podcast. I'm also an author. And how many books have you written?
4 books.
4 books in what time span?
Oh, probably the last 12 years.
Okay, in 12 years. That's a bit. Okay. And your books, that's available on your website. Can I see them on Amazon?
They're on Amazon website. It's Maximum Influence, Persuasion IQ, Laws of Charisma.
Okay.
Are all available, yeah. Okay. Better bookstores everywhere. Isn't that what you're supposed to say?
Bookstore? What's that? Come on.
I know, exactly. They're no longer bookstores. It doesn't work out that well anymore. But it's all digital, online. There's audios available. So it takes a deep dive into the world of influence and persuasion.
Very cool. So we're going to have links to all those books. We'll also have links to your website. So you run into someone and they say, okay, so what exactly do you do? And then you kind of go into it and you say, okay, well, I like to help people in terms of influence. I'm obsessed with that. What are some common questions you hear after that? What are you hearing from people?
A lot of them are frustrated, wondering what's taken so long to be successful. Because, I mean, you can take two people of equal talent, equal IQ, the same leads, one's super successful and one's not, you know, and what does that person have that the other person doesn't have? And the reason I'm passionate about it is, A, I didn't learn it. B, there's a lot of offensive skills out there. I mean, we talk about closing skills quite a bit of the time, and that's what people want to know. Well, give me more closing skills. I'm like, whoa, hold on. Closing skills is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date. Okay. Hello. If someone doesn't like you and trust you, if there's no need for your product or service, it doesn't matter what clever phrase you have. Now, there's a time and place for a closing skill. But the challenge is that's all people want to learn, closing skill. But what about your presentation? What about the intro? What about getting that the rapport, the trust? And here's fascinating research that I've done is that when people like you and trust you, you have an 88% chance of influence.
Okay.
And it can be that simple. And people think, well, people like me and people trust me. I'm like, no, they don't. In fact, in seminars, I'll ask this question. I'll say, you know that annoying person nobody likes? You know that person that rubs you the wrong way? You know that person that thinks they're funny, but they're not? And everyone's like, yeah, we know that person. And then I'll say, well, that could be you.
No.
And they're like, no. I'm like, yes, you don't know. You can get along with people like you, but the challenge is this. Most people's default setting is that they persuade people how they like to be persuaded. They sell people how they like to be sold, and that's wrong. We need to adapt to the person and persuade them how they want to be persuaded, and that's their big question. They want to know, well, why is this only working X percent of the time? You're doing the same thing over and over, and you have to adapt. You have to adjust. You have to help people persuade themselves, because the moment somebody senses you're going to try to sell them something, even though they need it, want it, like it, can afford it, they're going to resist you. So you need to help them sell themselves, help them persuade themselves, and that changes everything, and that makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. Now let me ask you, and I'm just gonna guess here, and I think you're the same way. Do you go into the actual different learning types? You have visual, auditory, and kinesthetic.
Sure.
Oh, okay. And you're probably auditory, correct?
I am mostly auditory.
Okay. Very good. And it's kind of funny too. You mentioned that, and I sometimes get flack over this. When we talk about people who are kinesthetic learners, mm-hmm. I call them weirdos. And because it's not really what I'm used to in terms of their mannerisms and things that they say and how they pause and stuff like that, I'm not really used to that. And sometimes, you know, if I'm not aware of that, I do get frustrated trying to sell to those kind of people, because I have to change up how much I do. Because when I'm normally selling and all that, I like to hear my own voice, so I ask a lot of questions about the customer. I'm like, all right, well, I just want the customer to talk. And when people don't really say a lot and they're not giving a lot of feedback without necessarily having that actual hands-on, or maybe changing up the presentation, or maybe doing something a little bit more creative, you know, I used to get really, really frustrated with them. Like, what is going on? And I'd say that that's probably, and I would like to ask you some questions about that, how to get over, you know, some people where you're not getting as much feedback, or maybe where you're not really matching up style. So I'm gonna ask some questions about that in a little bit. So you have the business Advanced Influence. What would you say sets apart your business? Because and people have asked me too. You know, if you were to say business consultant, management consultant, if you were to say whatever comes off the top of your head, the first thing that normally comes to my head when I hear management consultant is those who can't do teach, and those who can't teach are management consultants or also gym teachers. I'm kidding.
No, there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of consultants that have given the industry a bad name. You know, when you look at that, it's true. I mean, I think that's true most of the time, to where people are out there teaching some things they shouldn't be teaching. They are not up to speed. In fact, that's one of the reasons I'm in this world. I was teaching a university course on public speaking,
really?
And they asked me to teach a course on rhetorical methods. I'm like, what's that? Is that rhetorical methods? Ethos, pathos, logos? And I looked at the book. I'm like, this is a sales course. And he's like, no, it's not sales. I'm offended. University, we don't teach sales. I'm like, this is sales. No, it's not sales. I'm like, all right, I'll teach you rhetorical methods. But it was a sales class. But the reason I was so passionate about it is as I looked at their different models and theories, I had been in sales long enough to know that wouldn't work. That's not real. That's pretty, but would not work. And so you're right on. A lot of the things that they're teaching out there don't work, have never worked, or don't work anymore.
Hmm. and it's called rhetoric. The name of the course was rhetorical.
It was rhetorical methods. It was just a fancy name for a persuasion sales course, but it was
under what major? Under what major?
It was under communications.
Communications. Okay.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, in fact, I've been passionate about teaching university. You got to teach these courses. What are they going to use in the real world? How to present yourself? How to be influential? How to sell? I think Harvard's finally added some sales courses to their MBA programs because we all sell for a living. You know that, right?
Absolutely.
We all sell for a living, and that's the biggest challenge. And that's what I've been passionate about is that most people only really have 4 to 5 sales tools. Mm-hmm. And I've identified over 100.
100.
Because Abraham Maslow says if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, you treat everyone like a nail. You've got to get more tools.
I like that. I like that. That's cool. And it's interesting how you talk about from an actual communications major and an actual course. Because when I got into sales, and I have a degree in philosophy and political science, one of the things I thought about in terms of selling, and this is really because I came from, it was a one-call close environment. You know, you're trying to sell people, you know, a very, very high dollar product. And I thought, boom, Socratic method. I'm just going to go through the questions. I'm just going to run through and I'm going to pin them down. And you go through the actual logic. Sometimes that'll work. Sometimes it didn't. But I like to transfer, and that's part of the reason why I actually like sales. I'm like, oh, something from college I can actually use, because right now I don't use much of my major at all. I hate to say it. A lot of what I learned is from reaching out to people like you, reading books, going to seminars, listening to tapes. Having all those resources available and using that, I probably learned more that's actually applicable outside. So one thing I did want to ask you, how often do you run into people and they're not really willing to invest in a service like yours or to have a consultant come in? And how much of that do you have to actually go and persuade them? How much of that is people actually coming on board to you only because of your marketing, only because of the reach and word of mouth?
That's a great question. It's easy when there's word of mouth and someone's seen me before, that type of presentation. And it's also much easier when someone's on a commission, straight commission. They know there's a direct correlation between their income and their personal development. The hardest market for me are, you know, people that are on straight salary. They're manager. They know they need to learn a few things, but they're not really motivated. There's not a direct correlation between their personal development and the income. That's the hardest market for me to tap into and realize that, hey, this is a big difference. And so a lot of times with that type of market, I have to come in and prove my worth, and they realize the benefit to it. But that's a tough market for any type of personal development or training, is the people that, oh, yeah, we have a trainer, and they have to go to their monthly training. That's not the type of audience I like. I love hungry, commissioned people, entrepreneurs, salespeople that know the more I learn, the more I make.
Cool. And you said before, I think you were over in Bologna. So for your business, how much of that, and we were talking about this a little bit before offline, how much of your business is just domestic here within the U.S.? How much of that are you reaching out to people overseas? Or are they reaching out to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say 60% U.S., 40% international.
Okay. Do you find persuasion, or do you find how you present or what sort of materials or tools varies from culture to culture?
A little bit. I've identified what I call 12 laws of persuasion, but I've noticed as I've been to doing a lot over in the Middle East, I've done a lot in Asia, South America, around the world, is that it's the same potatoes, you just have to change the gravy, right? It's the same pasta, you just have to change the sauce. It works. And that's the key. Even in your presentation style, I mean, a lot of it's the same. Most people, they want to laugh, they want to have fun, they want to be entertained, they want to learn. But, you know, some cultures, you got to watch what you say. Some jokes, I have to fine-tune. What I say in Italy works well. It might not work over in Dubai or Qatar, those type of places. But for the most part, everything works. You just have to adjust a few things here and there.
Okay. And for your ideal customer, how much, or not necessarily customer, client, how much time did you spend kind of identifying, like, okay, I do really well in the, you know, 500 employees or up, or I do really well with businesses that have an intangible product? How much time do you spend, maybe, because in terms of sales, I like, and I do this with my sales team all the time. It's always, I always say like two things, and then like, she's like, you said two things before. I'm like, all right, well, fine. Where, in terms of where you're going to play and how you're going to win, how much of your time do you help salespeople in terms of that too, and maybe say you should focus on this market here, and how much of that is about strategy? Are you almost 90% strategy for what you do for your own business?
Majority is strategy. I mean, that's a big part of it as far as getting in there and teaching the skills that people need to learn. But yeah, I'd say that the biggest part is strategy.
Okay. And if you were to reach out to someone for the first time, or if you were to enter, or if you were to, you know, let's go ahead, if you're training someone, what would be your recommendation in terms of how much of that to keep formal and light, how much time to spend on building rapport? I mean, have you done some of the ratios on that in terms of what sort of demeanor is going to be more effective?
Yeah, that's going to depend on personality, obviously. And that's a big complaint as I interview people after someone's tried to sell them, is getting too friendly too fast, or the person that goes in, hey, tell me about the trophy, tell me about the golf clubs, and they're taking the golf, they're tired of talking about those things. And so a lot of those things have changed, but you still need to really get in and prove your worth. I think a big shift there is, as you look at percents, I mean, you want to spend the first 10-20% of time getting to know and building rapport and building trust, but that doesn't have to be the first thing. Mm-hmm. One thing that's kind of shifted is that they need to know that you're the expert. You need to teach them something up front in the beginning, in the, at first 10-20% of the time, so they know that you're an expert, that they're intrigued, that there's something a little bit different with what you're going to share with them.
So in your model, you change it up a little bit. So in terms of the old sales model, you have established rapport first thing. You're saying in the beginning, or even maybe simultaneous while you're actually establishing rapport, you're going to want to build credibility up front, when, and that might be providing some sort of value, some sort of resource. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Now, you have the personality that want to talk about the weather and their family. If they start that way, you want to continue with that. Mm-hmm. But if you sit down and you're not getting that interaction, you've got to prove your credibility, prove your worth up front. You're the expert. Because once you're the expert and you've taught them something, and there's something unique about them, something that you need, the doors of persuasion swing wide open. They want to hear, because when you're the expert, there's very little resistance, and you've got to get that up front. And then you can start building the rapport, but you've got to prove your worth. There has to be a reason to listen to you in that first part of your presentation, or they're going to tune out or tell you to go.
Okay. So when you're dealing with other businesses, how often are they at the point normally where they're looking at you and another possible resource, or at this point it's pretty much I'm gonna go with Kurt. I believe in his company. I believe in what he's doing. I just need to do something, and this is the way to do it. Or how often are people quote unquote shopping or getting the three bids or looking at a couple of different options for you personally?
I'd say 50-50. I mean, if they've read the book and they're contacting me, it's pretty much a done deal, as long as I don't blow it or say something dumb, right? I've already proved my worth, my expertise, because they've read about me, they've read my research. And then the other half, they might just be contacting me for a bid. They, you know, I was on a list of people that could be teaching influence. And so I'd say it's probably about 50-50.
Okay. And what would you say in terms of maybe clients, or maybe in terms of project, or maybe when you were just starting off? Can you give an example of one of your best success stories, or what would you say you're actually most proud of in terms of your career?
Oh, most proud of. I think working with some high-end, high-tech companies, telecom companies that were struggling with their lead generation, that were struggling with their close rates, and I was able to come in and triple their close rates because they were using a lot of old-school techniques with the marketing and the way they were interviewing people, and it just wasn't working out for them. So I was able to turn the model around, in fact, the first thing I did was a simple thing that a lot of companies make the mistake to, where people call up and the receptionist will say, hey, well, let me transfer you to sales. And that causes instant resistance. Nobody should ever do that. And so we changed it to consultants, which empowered the salespeople. They are now consultants, and it reduced resistance. And so right out front, I worked on their mindset, because as you know, we all know that mindset, way you think, is almost the most important thing in success and persuasion. We worked on the mindset. We worked on the skills. We walk people through a new model of influence, and it made a huge difference in their ability to sell people what they wanted.
Awesome. So now, and that's pretty interesting, because if you read a lot of the sales books and a lot of the sales material and going through stuff, a lot of the examples are for telecom companies. Is that something where you still have a client base in that regard? Because I've never, and I don't think my company has ever gotten a call from a quote unquote telecom company or someone trying to sell those services.
Well, there are a lot out there. A lot of the books do talk about telecom. I think that's just a space where people kind of cut their teeth. And the challenge with telecom is that you have so many options, right? That's going to be your challenge. How do you cut through the clutter? You have five options. They seem similar. How do you rise above the pack? And so it's always a good example to use to where a lot of people think, well, telecom's telecom. I can go with the cheapest. But as we all know, cheapest isn't always the best.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned in the beginning, too, how they interview their salespeople. So you also will consult with them and kind of go through some sort of archetype on who is going to be a good salesperson?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How much, and I always kick this around, how much is a salesperson is basically he's just made and he has the right personality set, and how much of that is teachable?
Oh, that's a great question. Salespeople born, they made. It's a combination of both. And that's the thing I'm looking for is I want to make sure they're teachable. I could teach anybody to sell. I mean, some people have inherent skills that make it easier. And that's one of my questions. I'm like, well, tell me the last book you read for personal development. That tells me everything I need to know for the most part. That if they're reading and listening to audios or the books and they're in personal development, that teaches me they know they need to learn things. And that's a huge question. And then the way they ask questions, the way they talk to me. And in fact, here's an interesting thing when you talk about salespeople now. It's a big shift in the world of persuasion is introverts are now more persuasive than extroverts. Right? And that's a big shift because extroverts come across as salespeople. They create a lot of resistance versus introverts come across as consultants. They listen. They ask more questions. And we all know the more you listen, the more questions you ask, they're going to tell you everything you need to know to persuade them, to sell them. And a lot of people just don't figure that out until it's too late.
Hmm. And when do you think that switch actually happened? When did it switch from an extrovert? Because if you go in terms of the old model and what used to work, I mean, you had people with gadgets, you know, and they just would just hook in attention real quick, and then they just would go into their pitch, and most of it was spent on, okay, do you have money? And a lot of that was very much an actual I guess you're gonna say push. Yeah, it was big. It was big in terms of push. When did that change? How did that happen?
I think that transition started about 10 years ago. I mean, we have a lot of factors as far as trust is at an all time low, and that's a big issue. People have access to more information now with the internet. 20 years ago, if you went to buy a car, you had to believe the person. Now you could find anything you want about your company, your product, or service, which could be very positive, and or very negative. And according to Advertising Age magazine, we're bombarded with over 5,000 persuasive messages a day. You put all those factors together, and trust being at all-time low, that really changes the playing field for a lot of people. And so now the introvert, the consultant, I'm the expert, I'm here to serve you, the consultative type selling has made a big shift. And, you know, people still using the old skills a little bit here and there. It works every once in a while, but this new style is coming out, making a big difference in those who are out there selling in the right way.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I remember I think it's a Franklin Covey like either book or it's some sort of resource, and it was called The Modern Gladiator, and it talked about exactly that. So if you looked at like 100 years ago, someone might get 80 new pieces of advertising or 80 new pieces of information, I think, a month, and now we get 5,000 a day. To cut through that, you have to be good. You have to know exactly what you're doing. So I do want to transition into that and kind of ask you. So again, I know we can't cover everything and you're not going to give away all the good stuff for free. I give my wife a very hard time about that. When she was designing a course and she was doing Periscopes and she was doing live streams and she just was giving away all the time. I'm like, why are you giving away the good stuff for free? What are you doing? Because she had spent exactly what you're doing. She had spent years finding what works in terms of either getting published or resources in terms of getting commissions through affiliate marketing or not even affiliate marketing, but through actual legitimate sources or growing your subscriber base or anything like that. She just was giving it away. She's like, oh, actually, I know this people. If you're just starting off, this is a great company to work with, and this is how they're set up. I'm like, what are you doing? It took you how long to get there? So to transition to that, what sort of resources or tools or what sort of advice would you have for someone who's listening right now to say, hey, Kurt, I'm trying to be more persuasive. I don't necessarily want to go into closing techniques. You know, what can I do immediately, or what can I do to make a big impact in terms of how persuasive I am? What's going to have the quickest return on investment in terms of time? What would you say?
Well, the one we'd mentioned before is learning how to sell people how they want to be sold, you know, and getting more tools. Okay. And one of the tools that we need to think about and talk about is, and this was a eye-opener for me as I spent all these years studying sales and persuasion and influence, is that up to 95% of influence involves a subconscious trigger, you know, that emotional side of the sale. And that feeling could be, I like them, I don't like them, I trust them, I don't trust them. I mean, if you meet somebody on the street for the first time, or they come into someone's office for the first time, it's 30 seconds before they've truly they've decided if they like you or trust you. And the research shows it could be a variety of things that people don't even think about, from smell. When people are near the smell of a Cinnabon store, they're more likely to donate to a charity. It could be proximics, or how close you stand to the person, or how you sit across from the person. It could be a gesture.
I'm going to Cinnabon before I see customers. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Cinnabon?
So, yeah, that's right. That's awesome. So that's a big one. I mean, all these things come into play, from the words you use to your gestures to the color of your clothes. Blues are more credible colors than other colors, and people don't realize that all this comes into play. They think they can vomit the 14 reasons they should do it, and they'll get all these features, and they'll assign a benefit to it, and that rarely works because you've given them two or three reasons not to do it. You've got to take a deep dive into human nature. In fact, we've learned more about the brain in the last 10 years and the last 100 years combined, and these subconscious triggers are the root to selling. And if you don't understand those, if you don't understand the gestures, the words you're using, all these things, it's going to really hurt you. So that's where I would focus, is understanding the emotional side of selling, those subconscious triggers, and that'll make a big difference in your ability to sell.
Okay. And you said selling people how they want to be sold. What sort of tools or what sort of resources are available? How do you actually figure that out? Because if you're just, you know, a lot of our listeners are definitely business to business sales, because there's definitely a lot of resources out there for on the retail side. But a lot of ours, they're just entrepreneurs, or they're maybe selling an intangible product. They might be going to a client and they're just going through the classic sales model where they're, you know, I'm cold calling, or maybe I'm fortunate enough that I have an appointment setter for me. I'm meeting this person for the first time. Maybe I looked them up on LinkedIn. I should think that if you're listening to this podcast, you're looking people up on LinkedIn, you're Googling them. So I was very surprised. I wasn't surprised, but Sherry says, "Oh, Kurt, you know?" I'm like, "Yeah, I Google him. I've seen his name before." Yeah, absolutely. How much time do you spend, or how do you figure that out? How someone wants to be sold, or how someone's going to be persuaded? How do you figure that out?
There's a variety of ways. Obviously, if you have an appointment setter, hopefully you could have a list of questions or things they can check off. They get a kind of a feel for their personality, their style. You mentioned LinkedIn. You can learn a lot about the person through LinkedIn or Facebook, some different things. Maybe you can talk to people that have worked with them before. But you, even if you've never had any contact with them, you can pick up different things throughout the conversation as you talk to them, or even listening to their voicemail. It's amazing that you could understand. I mean, if someone, you hear this, "It's Bob, you know the drill." Okay, that's a different personality than when you hear music in the background. "Hey, it's Sally. Your call's important to me." Okay, so even through voicemail, little things that you pick up here and there can make a big difference. Even the initial conversation. The challenge is for most people is that they're so stuck on their script and what they need to say and what they need to vomit on them that they're not picking up on these little cues that helps them adapt their presentation, their style, their questions, knowing when to stop and to back up. If we just take the time to do maybe a little research and be more perceptive over the phone or face-to-face, that makes a big difference in your ability to adapt your style to them.
How much of selling are the companies you're dealing with right now have transitioned to having, I like to call them foot soldiers, having outside salespeople versus having an inside sales department and relying on that? And how much, not necessarily harder, but how much of a difference is there between an outside salesperson and an inside salesperson?
You know, I don't know the exact percentage for you, but I'd say maybe 30%, maybe a third. And, you know, it's nice to outsource and have somebody else do it, someone else set the appointment. But the biggest challenge you're going to have, of course, is the training and the turnover. But even bigger than that is this person passionate about your product? Do they really believe in what you're doing?
No, I'm not even talking about about outsourcing. I'm just talking about like having either people who only sell on the phone and online versus people actually knocking on doors, going to see customers, flying.
Oh, as far as separating those?
Yes.
Yeah, it's starting to happen. I guess with the people that I've worked, maybe 20%, but it's amazing. Some people are really good on the phone, but not face-to-face. Some people are good face-to-face and on the phone, and you're right. Some people can do it all, and they have all the skills, but you know, some people are just gold on the phone. They know what they're doing, and some people just need to see the face. They need the interaction. It's part of their personality, and so there is definitely a shift there.
So when you're giving a seminar or whenever you're speaking to a company, then are you mainly, you said 80-20 or I didn't get the figure down, and we can clean that up in post. How much is outside? How much is inside sales? Are you focusing on some more outside sales skills, or are you just saying it's pretty much universal? You can tell from tone. You can tell from all the research.
Yeah, it's universal. I definitely think it's universal. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have any sort of special tool, someone that might be, I mean, aside from maybe if you're an outside, I think sometimes outside salespeople have a little bit better advantage because they can gather intel in terms of posture and body language. You can go and you can see, and I recommend this as well, you can see the sign-in book and see how many of your competitors have been there. You can see who they've actually asked for. So you might see some other decision makers, and you might have some additional tools that might be face-to-face. But then again, that person that actually is inside, you know, you can be anyone. Some people I know who are very good on the phone, just face-to-face, I don't know why, they're just not as presentable. I think that's very, very interesting how just the overall set of influence, it doesn't really matter what you're saying. If you learn the skills and you have the techniques, you can do it on the phone. You can do it face-to-face. You don't have to be face-to-face to be a good influencer.
Yeah, I agree. It's easier for me, especially face-to-face. You're seeing them. You're watching the motion, the gestures. But the reality is a true salesperson is probably going to do them all. If you're going to do the face-to-face first, then there's going to be some work over the phone. And some are doing everything over the phone, and that takes a special talent and skill to connect over the phone and build the trust. But then they're more skilled on reading the vocal inflections and understanding the person and asking the right questions. And so for most people and most sales, they're still doing all of it to where they might be Skyping, they might be doing a presentation, they might be doing a webinar, they're going to be doing things over the phone and then persuading via email. That's a whole nother area that you need to focus on as far as learning how to persuade and influence. So people are specializing, but most salespeople are going to be selling through every medium.
Gotcha. How much – now, you also do this as well. So you also help people craft their messages, how they send the email, what kind of words they use, spacing, greeting. Do you go into that much detail, or you just kind of give, okay, here are some bullet points and these are some things you want to focus on?
No, I go into deep detail on that one because it's what I call the law of verbal packaging, that – every word you use, especially in an email, but also in a presentation, will attract or repel the person. And a lot of salespeople are using words that they use every day, so it doesn't faze them, but it repels the prospect. It triggers that subconscious trigger, and the person just doesn't feel right. Every word you matter. So we go through different words and word choice and what they can and can't use, what words are more persuasive than others, because it matters.
And one thing I find interesting, and you probably have a little bit more data on this, how has the word choices had to change because so many salespeople were already using those words? So instead of save money, everyone's saying save money. Now I have to say cut cost. Now I can't say cut cost anymore because everyone's saying cut cost. I have to say something different. How often are you finding people have to pivot and maybe use a different word because we've already got those 5,000 messages? Like, for example, talk about the old school method. Hey, I'm just going to give you some free information. When I hear free information, I'm going back to the old model. I remember that. Oh, yeah, some free information. I'm going to hear a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how often are you finding that, or are you not seeing that?
Oh, you're seeing it, but it's accelerating. It used to be maybe every 10 years. I mean, you saw a used car get changed to pre-owned, right? I mean, that's just kind of how it is. And so I would say every couple of years. I mean, free used to be the word. Now that doesn't pull anymore. And
absolutely free. Absolutely free as opposed to regular free, which I still don't know the difference.
Instead of mostly free. Right? And that's the thing. Things have changed and it's accelerating because we're getting so many different messages that people have to cut through that clutter, and we hear the same phrases and word choices over and over again. people don't realize you've got to look at every word and what your industry's using, what's repelling, what's attracting people, because if you don't, it's really going to hurt your presentation.
Gotcha. In terms of presenting and stuff like that too, and this is something I've had pushback in terms of the company I work for, and the owner, he's seen it my way now. Sometimes we'll get, you know, well, you're spending too much time working on this account or working on this presentation. This is what our competitor's doing, and they're able to get this kind of customer. Why don't we do that? And I like to think that it's better to spend more time on an account that, you know, and cover all bases. I believe in building in redundancy. So we did another podcast on presenting. You're going to assume the internet's not going to work that day if you want to do a presentation. Have some sort of backup. So I bring an iPad. My iPad can be a mobile hotspot. It can be a Wi-Fi spot. I can present on the iPad if I need to. I have printed versions. I have extra copies of any sort of proposals in case someone else is going to be in the meeting. I always have extra business cards. I definitely go above and beyond. How much of persuasion do you think is just preparing for that initial meeting? Let's say we have a classic two-step model. First meeting, I'm just going to gather information. Second meeting, I'm going to present an actual proposal.
Oh, you want a number? I'd say 40-50%. I mean, you're prepared because that does a couple of things. You're prepared for whatever they're throwing at you. You're putting yourself in their shoes. What's in it for them? You've brought extra copies just in case. And so you're thinking through it ahead of time instead of just showing up and giving the same presentation that you've given 20 times before. You're adapting, you're customizing, you're thinking it through. So it not only helps a prospect, but it does something for your psyche, your mindset. I mean, the study shows that when you feel influential, you're more influential. And so when you're prepared, that reduces your fear. You come across different with your prospect. You have the right information. So that is a huge piece of your ability to sell, is being prepared. But then we get so busy, we just show up and just wing it. And that works maybe every once in a while. But for every minute you prepare, it's going to make a huge difference in your confidence, in your demeanor, in your ability to adapt to that person and sell them how they want to be sold.
Now, I do want to ask that. So we talk about selling to different personality types, and we talk about the person who talks a lot. When you have a limited time, how can you best do that? When you have someone who likes to talk a lot and who's very, very chatty, and you're getting off topic, or in terms of the actual, you need to gather information from the actual person, or you need to see whether or not it's going to be a fit, or you need to get more information. How do you politely, or how do you personally pivot someone back onto the actual subject matter without coming across as, or do you just give less information at that point, or do you ask less questions if a person is just rambling on about a lot of different things?
Well, if they're in rambling phase, some people, some personalities need to ramble.
Okay.
And sometimes it sells people, be like, I don't have time for this. But, you know, if you want that connection, that rapport, that trust, sometimes you've got to listen to it, you know, to a point. I mean, if it's after 3 hours, you obviously got to do something. But they need to talk. They need to talk about their family. And if you're building rapport and that connection is happening, this is a good thing, right? Again, we have to figure out how much time you want to invest in that. But then it comes to the point, once you have that connection, you feel that you have that trust, we always have heard that questions control the conversation. And so when there's kind of a lull in that conversation, just asking a great question goes a long way. I mean, one of my favorite ones is, well, hey, that's interesting. Let me ask you a question. What does that perfect solution look like to you? Right? And just shut up and keep asking questions and get them to the point where they'll tell you everything you need to know to sell them. But, you know, there has a point there to where you have to cut them off. Again, if you're going hours just listening about their family and different things, there's a certain point there. But if you ever need control during a presentation, during anything, asking a question will give control back to you.
That's golden. Sales is asking good questions, and I think persuasion, I would imagine you would agree, persuasion is more about the kind of questions you ask and how you ask them and the quality of your questions. Because people can tell right away, and I've been spending a lot more time with my actual sales team on the quality of the questions and the actual tone and how that mannerism comes across. Because sometimes if it sounds like you're being like if you're like the Grand Inquisitor, it's not gonna work. You need to gather information from them, and you need to make them they need to feel that you are an expert. A lot of that comes in the not only the quality of the questions, but also how you ask the questions. Correct?
Exactly. And my research shows, if I've looked at top salespeople, they actually ask three times more questions. And you have to realize, too, that even if you know the answer to the question, you have to ask the question. And here's the example that I give. If you went to a doctor, you're feeling sick, and you talk to the nurse, and the doctor finally opens the door, doesn't walk in and says, "I know what you have. I will go ahead and get you a prescription. I'll leave it at the front desk and shut the door." Okay, let's assume the doctor's 100% correct. The doctor's thinking good time management. The doctor's thinking I just solved their problem. The doctor's thinking they should be happy. But you, as the patient, you're saying, "Wait a minute, what's going on?" You'd be offended. You would, right? And that's what you need to do, is to have to ask the right questions, to be the consultant, to come across as the expert. And again, when you're perceived as the expert, they'll answer as many questions as you want, just like the doctor. It's very rare for a doctor to ask too many questions. You want them to ask questions because you want them to solve your problem.
And yeah, I hear that a lot in terms of sales, and a lot of people do give that analogy. Now, what about when you run into a situation, and did you ever read the book called The Challenger Sale?
Oh, you bet. Uh-huh.
How do you best handle that, where someone thinks that they have a solution, and yours might be a slight spin on that, or maybe they came in asking for X and you feel that product Y is going to be better for them? How do you pivot, or how do you best persuade someone in that regard, where they've done the research and you're kind of helping them see the light of maybe a different solution or something different than what they had in mind? Because a lot of people, you mentioned the actual doctor's appointment, some people like that. Some people say, "I don't want to go to a doctor who's going to write me a prescription. I already know. I already did the research and stuff like that." My mother, who's crazy, she's like that. If the doctor will go in, "Just write me a prescription for this, I'll be fine. This is what I have." She'll go in. Some people are like that. "I'll go online and I'll just order this right away." How do you help sell the actual different package, or maybe where your solution is going to be different? So, for example, if you were to come in and you were to sell to my company, you know, I might say, "Okay, well, I'm going to want you to be a motivational speaker. I just want you to pump up my sales team." And you say, "Well, no. I want to spend more time learning the process and learning about what you're doing, and here's why." How do you make that pivot when you need to influence someone into a different product where they're kind of sold on you and they're sold on the company and they like you, but your idea is different than what they had imagined? How do you work that in?
That's a great question. I mean, we've talked about your ability to ask questions and coming across as the expert. It needs to be done gradually for most people. Let me explain. There's a technique called FITD, which is foot in the door.
Okay.
That, let me just kind of explain it with a study. Everything I teach is based on science, to where they went to psychology students at a university and said, "Hey, will you participate in a sensory perception study Saturday at 6 a.m.? Right? That's a pretty big ask.
For a college kid?
Yeah, college kids. Uh-huh. And they got 24% to say yes. Then they applied the foot in the door technique, and this is how simple it is. They said, "Hey, we're doing a study on sensory perception. Will you participate?" "Well, yeah." "It's Saturday. Are you available?" "Yeah." "It's at 6 a.m. Will you be there? Can you be there?" Went from 24% to 56%.
Huh.
Now, here's the important thing. When you're getting a lot of resistance, what you're asking is too big. If you look at your sales presentation and you're getting a lot of resistance in a certain area, you need to take your question or your yes question and break it down to 3, 4, 5, 6 different yes questions. And that's true with this type of thing that we're talking about. If you're getting a lot of resistance, you've got to slowly lead them down the path of getting the yeses, helping them realize for themselves that you're the expert, that they need to make the change. And that's the key thing, is a little bit at a time. Because if you ask for that big thing, they're going to resist. Because the moment you prove that they're wrong, they're going to resist you. The human brain needs to be right. And if you show them that they're wrong, even though they are wrong, they're not going to admit it, and that's where that resistance happens. And if you could break it down to smaller yeses, help them understand for themselves that you are the perfect solution, even though they had a good solution too, that makes the biggest difference to be able to crack that code.
So your philosophy is more of the – and I personally, I've used both sometimes – where you go in for a bunch of small asks, and eventually go to a big ask. So let's say you're in a business to business environment, and basically what you're doing, you can either get them to commit to all your services at once, or to go ahead and do the smaller services. Is your overall plan to say, "All right, I'm going to ask for the smaller one and build up," or "I'm going to ask for the bigger one, knowing I'm going to need to go back to the smaller one"? Do you kind of feel that out in terms of resistance?
Yeah, feel that resistance, and it's always good to get that small initial order, even though it's not a lot of money, just to get that foot in the door to get things going to make it happen. Yeah, I mean, you always want to get the yes, unless you're trying to adjust the perception of value. You know, the knee-jerk reaction, it's too expensive. Then you would use a different approach. It's actually called door in the face approach, where you do want to get the no just to adjust the perception of the value of what you're working with. Meaning, let me give you an example. They went to get to students. They would say, "Hey, will you do a 2-minute survey?" And 25% said yes. Now, the door in the face, you're adjusting the perception of time, value, energy, money. They said, "Hey, will you do a 2-hour survey?" "Well, no, I can't do that." "Will you at least do a 2-minute survey?" It went from 25% to 50%. So sometimes you want to, if you're adjusting the perception of the value of your product or your service, you can come with that approach. But usually, if you want to persuade them a little bit at a time, get their business, a foot in the door, it's much easier to get compliance that way with a foot in the door technique, unless you're trying to adjust the perception of value or time.
Okay. Good. Now, and then we'll kind of wrap things up a little bit. So we talked about different learning styles, visual, auditory, kinesthetic. You're definitely auditory, or I like to think you are, and maybe you're agreeing with me. Maybe I'm just really, really persuasive. I'm just telling you. But I can kind of guess by the way you talk and how you carry yourself that you're more an auditory. I'm definitely more an auditory. Like if I read audiobooks, or not read, if I listen to audiobooks, I actually process things a little bit better. I'm listening more things in the car. And I talk about how sometimes I call kinesthetic people weirdos. How do you best sell maybe to that type, that personality type that's maybe a little bit more pensive, or maybe the person where you're not getting as much feedback, or maybe where it's just harder to build rapport, where you just have that, "Hey, it's Bob, you know what to do," and you're trying to get commitment, you're trying to get those little yeses, and you're not getting that. How do you sell to those kind of people? How do you persuade those people? Is there a magic bullet? How do you do it?
Well, the magic bullet is realizing that they're different. You mentioned weirdos, and you have to realize that you're a weirdo to them, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And once we realize that we're all weird, and we just have to adapt. In fact, in the seminar setting, I say, "Okay, well, let's talk about different personalities. What is the best type of personality to have?" People kind of look at each other. They get all sheepish because they all think theirs is the best.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, "I'm okay with that, but you have to adapt." And so the magic bullet is realizing, something's wrong here. I'm not connecting. Because if you're an auditory person, you present how you like to be presented to, and so you're geared to presenting to an auditory person, and so you have to realize, okay, they're kinesthetic. Let's get the whiteboard out. Let's draw it out. Let's map it out for you. Even though that's not your style, they're going to need to get on the whiteboard and map it out, or see a visual presentation like PowerPoint, versus the auditory person just needs to hear it and talk it through, and versus the. The kinesthetic person, you're right, these are to take it apart. How does it work? How does this do? Right? Adapting to those different styles is important. But the magic bullet is realizing, okay, you're different, which is okay. But then when that connection's not there, are they auditory, are they visual, are they kinesthetic, what is their personality? And adapt and sell them how they want to be sold.
So, when you talk about different persuasion styles and stuff like that, do you go with the normal VAK, VAK, or do you go even further? And Brian Tracy has some different models. You have the thinker, you have the knee jerk people. Do you have a set way that you're gonna? And again, people can be a little bit of everything. Do you have a set internal like planner where you say, okay, well, this person is a type A person, this is a type B, this is a C person, where you go and you actually persuade it, or do you just follow the normal VAK?
I kind of extend it a little bit, because when you go into personalities, you could go into, well, there's 32 different types of personalities. And to
32?
anybody, yeah, to anybody that's like, whoa, blow your brain blows up, right? It's too many. And so I say, I mean, if you studied NLP, there's the meta programs, visual, auditory, kinesthetic is a meta program. And so what I try to teach is, let's get used to one and how to adapt, and let's add another one. So once you learn visual, auditory, kinesthetic, you could take a look, okay, are they introverts or the extroverts? Okay, are they assertive or are they amiable? Okay, are they motivated by inspiration or desperation? Okay. And so as you grow in the process, I think it's easier for most salespeople, okay, let's work on this one meta program first, and that's meta programs, how you see the world, and we all see the world a little bit differently. All right, once you've mastered that, okay, now are they more introvert or extroverted? and you could add some different elements to the style. Because to most people, personalities can be very overwhelming when you look at how many of the different types of personalities and the reactions to different things. Pick one. And visual auditory kinesthetic is a great place to start, and then start adding some of these other ones. Then it becomes natural to you. You don't have to think about it every time you try to sell somebody.
And in terms of, and I say jokingly, in terms of the weirdo. So for me personally, for my company, pretty much what we do is it's mainly service based. I mean, we do have software, we do have some systems in place. And one of my sales reps actually asked me, because when we show the software, depending on who the person is, if someone is kinesthetic, I won't even show the system. Like normally, like you demo, say, hey, this is how you do this, and this is how you find this, and you're really gonna like this, and you're really excited about it. When I run into a kinesthetic person, I'll actually let them in the driver's seat and I'll let them play around with it a little bit, and I might ask a question. So, okay, how? So let me ask you now, for your process, how do you do this? So if you're on my website, I mean, do you see yourself being able to do that? Can you get what you need to do easily? And that works out a lot better, I think. Just you talk about changing how you present. And my sales lady said, well, how come you didn't show it? How come you let him? I'm like, because that's how that person is. Mm-hmm. He wants to take it apart. If I were to tell him how to do things, as much as I can paint a visual picture, as much as I can be enthusiastic, oh, you're really going to like this, or this is going to be great, you need to be able to adapt. And one thing, we definitely got a lot of great information. I do want to do a quick plug, and we do in the beginning, and we change this up, and maybe I'll ask you this too. When you have, for example, a sponsor, we've actually played around with that a little bit. We've mentioned the sponsor in the beginning of a message. We mentioned in the middle and at the end. Is there a best practice for that if you're trying to persuade someone where you do want to pitch something?
Well, usually it has to be the beginning or the end.
Beginning or end, not in the middle.
Yeah, middle. Everything gets lost in the middle. It's the primary recency effect, to where it's the beginning and the end we remember the most. And it's usually at the end where you're asking them to do what you want them to do, or to remember those things. If I was to choose one, it would be absolutely at the end.
Absolutely at the end. Great. So we're going to transition into that. Our sponsor for today's podcast, it's going to be Blinkist. I love Blinkist. And what they actually do is they take whole books and they narrow it down into 15, 20-minute reads of what actually is valuable in that book. Or they make it very, very digestible. So someone who loves reading, and you might say, well, hey, I read a 300-page sales book, but I only got two ideas. They actually funnel out some of the actual ideas. So if you go to pushpullsales.com/quickread, you can go up there and you can sign up for a free trial. Or if you want, you can just sign up for the thing. So for me, when I saw it, I just clicked right away. I'm like, I'm definitely going to do this. And you're able to read so many books in a short period of time. To transition into that, I think you have some great resources. I checked out your website, looked at your podcast just now. Where can people find you, Kurt?
A couple of places. The podcast is at maximizeyourinfluence.com.
Okay.
And if you want more about me, and actually if you want to take a persuasion IQ test, you can go to advancedinfluence.com.
And is it absolutely free or kind of free?
Mostly free.
Mostly free.
No, it's absolutely free. If you want to take your persuasion IQ test, you see kind of your rank in the world of persuasion and influence. And if you're really hardcore, want to get into it, check out our 52-week program at influenceuniversity.com, where we take a deep dive and get you more tools. If that's my main message, is get more tools.
And you said that earlier. You said you have over 100 different tools.
Mm-hmm.
100 different tools. And what was there 12 of? There was 12.
12 laws of persuasion.
There's only 12?
Well, all the
100 more than 12,
within the 12 laws. Okay. There's 12 main laws that you need to understand to really work with people, both on the emotional side and the logical side.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you have, in terms of, so not only are you doing face-to-face, you're going out to businesses, presenting all around the world, doing the podcast, you have an online resource where someone at any time can go in. So let's say you have a sales rep, he's working, he's knocking on doors all day, you know, at the end of the day or on the weekend, he can go and he can check out your website and he can learn at his own pace and on his own time, correct?
Correct.
How long did it take you to actually develop that and put that in place?
Well, the website took a couple years, but I mean, as far as the content, that took probably 15 years. I mean, there's hundreds of videos, hundreds of audios, great resources to help people out. There's over 1,000 different articles, and it's built in two ways to where you can learn it step by step. But some people, especially salespeople, no, teach me how to do this one, and you can search it and find it and quickly solve that challenge that you're having.
So you also have quick resources. That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that as a sales manager. I love that as a salesperson. Any sort of resource where I can do things on my own time, or where I can point my sales reps, or where I can point my sales team, I'll definitely do that. In terms of the influence IQ, let me ask you, how many times do you see aliases coming through where someone doesn't want to put their actual name? So if you go to a business and you tell them that, hey, you can go online, and they just might put like Bob Veal or something like that, where someone, you might be a little bit embarrassed. Actually, I'm not as persuasive as I thought.
A lot.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people there just trying to see what's going on, what's happening. And, you know, we could all improve in the world of persuasion and influence, but mostly salespeople, especially salespeople, think they're doing better than they actually are, especially in the world of trust. Well, they trust me. It's interesting, as I do these intercepts, I'll talk to the salesperson, did you build trust? And 9 out of 10 times they'll say yes, and I'll talk to the prospect, and only one out of ten times was a trust. So there's a disconnect between where we think we are and where we really are, and that's a big challenge for salespeople.
Cool. All right. Thank you again, Kurt. We definitely appreciate having you on the podcast today. We're going to have links to all the resources that you talked about today. We're going to have links to your website. Definitely going to put a link to the Influence IQ. Last thing, do you have any final words? Do you have anything for our listeners?
Yeah. You know, I was passionate about persuasion and sales, and there's a direct correlation between your ability to sell and your income and your personal development. I just want to put it to you this way. There's two ways to double your sales, double your income. You can work twice as hard, twice as many dials, twice as many presentation, or you can double your sales skills, double the amount of tools that you're using. Get more tools, persuade people how they want to be persuaded. It'll make such a huge difference in every aspect of your life. We all sell for a living as parents, teachers, leaders, managers. Master these skills, increase your income. It'll make a huge difference in your ability to sell and the success that you're having.
Awesome. Thanks again, Kurt. Great stuff.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you.